And we are live. Yes, this is the first edition of Well Talk Live. This is part of the new thing that we're doing with VWell. It's VWell Community Connect. So thank you so much for joining us. We are going to wait a little bit while some people join us before we join the discussion. But for right now, allow me to introduce my guest, my co-host for the rest of this live. We are here with psych practitioner, with executive coach. We are here with Fatin El Ayash. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
It's a big moment. It's the first time we're doing this live. How do you feel about it? You have done TV interviews before.
Yes, I have. And this is quite interesting to be talking for 30 to 45 minutes. It's lovely.
Maybe longer. We'll see how the conversation goes.
Exactly.
So tell me a little bit about the work that you do specifically when it comes to being a psych practitioner. I saw your Instagram and your LinkedIn. You've got so many different things that you do.
Yeah, so many letters, right?
Yeah.
So yes, I'm an executive coach. I do executive coaching one-on-one. I'm a positive psychology practitioner. So it's not the psychology, it's a positive psychology practitioner. I'm an NLP practitioner, TEDx speaker, lots of titles. But what is really important for me, Faris, is that I'm on a mission to create positive workplaces through coaching conversations.
Amazing.
And that's what really drives me every morning.
And so, how do you approach that mission of yours, which is to spread positivity in the workplace? Is it by going straight to the top, to the boss, to the middlemen, or to the employees themselves?
So with executive coaching, I do coach CEOs and C-suite executives. So that's the top. And I do coach as well middle managers and emerging leaders, as we call them. So we hit that from different angles. And I believe coaching conversations allow people to know their what's in there, because I believe that we've got all the resources within us. And my job is just to pull that out, you know. We've got that. And I always say everyone is a star, they just need to learn how to shine. So I teach them, I pull that out so that they can shine. That's how we bring coaching and positives, because there's lots of integration. We can't, you know, separate both. Positive psychology and coaching go hand in hand beautifully, because it's positive psychology is the science. It's a scientific study of what makes life worth living. Right.
I like that. What makes life worth living? So it's how to be happier in our day to day lives or happier at work?
Everywhere.
Both.
Right? How we do one thing is how we do everything. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, if anyone has issues at home, work will be affected, and vice versa. If there were things going on at work, you could take that to home easily, take it to some sleepless nights. And so these two, I think we are one person, and that's actually my coaching philosophy. So I coach these people in this holistic way. I look at the personal and professional lives, and it's something that I cannot say, Faris, just let's talk business, let's talk work. No, there might be things that you're bringing from the personal life that are impacting your work life. So that's my strategy and my philosophy. And I believe, especially, again, correct me if I'm wrong, leaders at the top, it gets lonely at the top. So they don't have anyone to talk to. So having someone who they trust, who they have built rapport with, would make a big difference, because they are at the top of the pyramid. They have no one to talk to.
Well, I definitely can't wait to get into the discussion. And remember, we are live. This will be uploaded to YouTube a little bit later on. But if you're watching this live, you can leave comments and we will be addressing them live on Well Talks Live. So if you've got anything you want to ask, if you want to give us certain scenarios, problems you're having at work, if you're a boss and you want to make your team more productive, if you're an employee, you're having trouble with your colleagues, then send over the question and Fatin will be addressing those. So first thing I want to talk about, positive psychology. Does it start at home or does it start at work?
It starts everywhere. It starts everywhere.
It's a circular mindset.
It's a mindset, yeah. It's founded on, you know, the belief that every individual wants to live and lead a meaningful and fulfilled life. Because you reach a certain age or a certain period in your life that you've got the accomplishments, you've got the financials well, you've got all of that. And if you're not making an impact or living or leading a fulfilled and meaningful life, there might be some, like you feel there's something missing. And that's the beauty of that foundation, which I think it makes it so easy for people to fall in love with positive psychology, because it's true. It's, we live that, you know?
Now, you correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
Something I've noticed is sometimes people will give too much attention to a mindset while forgetting that they're missing out on the basics. So somebody might think they're depressed or they're stressed, or that they need to go to a therapist, or they need to do all these different things. And then if you look into their life, they're not sleeping enough, they're not drinking enough water, they're not going to the gym, they're not eating well, they're not getting regular hours of sleep. Do you need to start with the basics before then delving into the deep stuff?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And sleep is a very big topic. I'm not a sleep expert, but I know if I personally don't sleep at night, I would struggle the second morning, because it's really, really one of the basics, as you said, with food and exercise and getting hydrated. This is the bare minimum that we expect from people to do. And I always say, I shouldn't congratulate you for, not Faris, but that person, for taking care of yourself by eating, sleeping, and exercise. It's the bare minimum. It's just like, I can't congratulate you for stopping at a red traffic light, right? You have to. And that's as simple as stopping to do that before doing anything else. Yeah, before looking at depression or anxiety.
Yeah, honestly, I thought I was depressed. It turns out I was dehydrated. I started drinking water.
Yeah.
Suddenly I feel much, much better.
And you're going to the gym.
I am going to the gym now. It's all improved very much.
Amazing.
Yeah, just by doing those basics.
Yeah.
But I did want to ask, when it comes to the workplace.
Yes.
To have a good working environment, to have a good office environment, where does the responsibility lie? Does it lie with the employees to make sure that they are dealing with people correctly? Or is it really the manager or even the owner, the top boss, the CEO's job to make sure that there's a cohesive work environment?
Right. In my opinion, the responsibility is on us, on me as an individual in that organization, because we can't change anyone if they don't want to change, or if they're not seeing that behavior, for example, is costing them anything. So their responsibility is on me, because the only person I can control is me. My thoughts, my emotions, my feelings, my reactions, my behavior, my words, this is only controlled by me. What other people say, what other people do, what other people feel is never in my control. The weather, politics is never in my control. So who I can control is me, and how do I deal with these people? Because yes, why I'm saying my mission is to create positive workplaces, because there's lots of toxicity in the workplaces. There's lots of people who are not standing up for themselves, setting boundaries, dealing with a bully or a negative person who just pulls them down, or someone who just doesn't do the work, and so there are lots of stories that unfortunately bring us to toxicity. So controlling us is the first step.
Do you think there is a road to positivity which starts with caring less? Not that I want to say you shouldn't care, but I do know that some people at work they get really upset if something happened in a certain meeting, or they stay up at night thinking about work, or if their boss is disappointed, it really affects them mentally. Yeah. Do you think it is wise to be like, it's just a job?
Yeah.
Like, it gets my money, it is my passion, but maybe I should care less, especially when I'm at home?
You know, this a bit scares me, that careless or indifference to the workplace, because that eventually will lead to personal issues.
Mm.
How? Because if we just care less and think that when we care less, things disappear, in reality, they don't, right? So it's not like we're brushing things under the carpet, thinking that, no, they're not there. We have to address that. One of the game changers for me personally is setting boundaries and saying no to others, because I learned it the hard way, you know. I get to learn now that saying no to others is me saying yes to myself. And I learned that putting my oxygen mask first is important.
Yeah,
I was debunking that for a long period of my time, and I was saying, you know, the aviation industry, they know nothing. How dare they say, put my oxygen mask first before supporting others, because I'm a helper. I love to help.
Selfless.
Yes. Yeah, I was so proud. I took pride in this word, you know, I'm selflessly caring. And then it got into me. So I started learning how to put my oxygen mask first in order to support others. So setting boundaries to me is a game changer.
Okay, so it's not necessarily about caring less, but it's about taking care of yourself. Because I do want to flip the question around, because Dubai especially, very fast-paced working environment.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of competition. The best and the brightest in the world, not
yes.
just in the country, are here competing for top positions. If you want to make a certain level in your career, you have to give up weekends, you have to give up relationships, you have to work round the clock, you have to constantly be thinking about work. What's the downside of that?
You know, everything has a cost, right? Everything has a price tag. And I believe we always have to look, my clients know that when I do this, it's the cost and benefit relationship. We have to look at what's that benefiting me and what's that costing me. And we always stay in any relationship between me and myself, between you and your colleagues, between you and yourself. Always, when we stay in that relationship, when it's benefiting me more than it's costing me. And we'll only leave that relationship when it starts costing us more than it's benefiting us. So we need to look at, is that costing me or benefiting me? And if that's costing me, what would that cost me a year from now? What would that cost me 5 years from now? And maybe, Faris, what would that cost me 10 years from now? Because when I ask these questions, usually when it's 5 or 10 years from now, people would say, it would cost me my health. And we were just talking about the basics, and the basics is our health, right? So we'll have to look at that equation.
Reshuffle.
Yeah,
I do want to ask, because you are in the position where you are coaching CEOs,
yeah.
top executives, people who are like Forbes 100, massive names, successful, big house, big car. From the outside, everyone's like, wow, they've really made it. Are they happy?
No.
Mm. What do you think is the main thing that is affecting them?
There are lots and lots of issues there. Because the building block, the basics are not there. They're not taking care of their sleep. They're not taking care of their eating habits. They are overworking because they're not, maybe sometimes, mostly, they're not setting boundaries and saying no to maybe the board, right? And the stress before the board meetings is just insane. It's really sleepless nights. And this goes into even sometimes marital problems, whether I'm coaching men or women, both. You know, because again, that equation is not there. And you brought me to a very interesting thing, which is happiness. You know, I told you why it's so easy to fall in love with positive psychology, because we're looking at meaning and purpose in life and fulfillment. And happiness doesn't come with money. And there's this old research that has been done in the States, and they were looking at how money and happiness are related. They found out, I forgot the exact figure, but it's, I think, more than $75,000 per year or $80,000 per year. If you do more than $75,000 or $80,000 per year, the happiness is not increasing. It would increase for the people who are doing less, because they are really struggling to get the basics, right? But those big cars and the big villas and everything, they're doing that much more than that, and happiness is not there.
Well, I feel like I'm seeing a movement in work environments. I don't think it's affected every industry yet, but we are seeing more and more of it, especially in the United Arab Emirates, which is CEOs, founders, suddenly moving away from the old format of being running a business, which is to get the most output out of your employees while paying the least, while trying to get the most productivity. Let's save money on light bulbs by putting in fluorescent bulbs. Let's save space by putting them in tiny cubicles. I think people are starting to realize that a happier workforce, it's not just a charitable thing to do. It's not just a nice thing to do or a moral thing to do. It actually increases productivity, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and the dollars. It increases productivity and profitability for the companies. So yes, the movement is going, and I think the ripple effect will keep on growing bigger and bigger, especially after COVID. Mental health was up through the roof, right? And people started losing their workforce because of mental health. So now there is a budget to take care of the people, and more organizations are jumping on that wagon 100%. And that's music to my ears.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of us, especially if the bosses, the CEOs, start to invest in this type of thing to keep employees happy. But they can't fix everything. Sometimes there's interpersonal difficulties within an organization. One colleague has a problem with another colleague. And I know a lot of people are interested in watching this live because of that. It's a big question, but what is the first step? What's the first thing to do if you have a problem with somebody who's on the same level as you in the company?
So
on a parallel. It's not your boss, it's not a subordinate.
It's a colleague, right? So yeah, what kind of problem? Let's play this.
let's make a scenario.
Yeah.
There's a colleague that's just mean to you. Just mean to you, doesn't say good morning, doesn't reply to emails. You come at them with a positive attitude and a smile and they don't return it, and it starts to affect the working environment.
Yeah.
How do you handle that?
First step. Yeah. So again, look at what I can control. I can control my reaction towards that meanness or rudeness or whatever that is. Second, I will go personally and ask them, what's there? You know, I'm trying to get closer. And there's this reaction. What's that?
Nothing. Nothing's wrong. Okay. You're imagining it, Fertin.
Oh, okay. So that gaslighting. So, okay. So I'm imagining that. But actually, in our meetings, let's do this role play, right?
Yeah.
So in our meetings, I'm noticing that you are just being mean whenever I am talking. And I'm feeling disrespected. So I'm talking about me. I'm not saying you are mean. That's the first step. I'm feeling disrespected when each time we discuss this, you look around and feel like you are just bored or, I feel disrespected, exactly. So you're playing on my nerves now, right?
Yeah.
So I feel disrespected and that's impacting our work and we need to look into that. And that's me.
I can't keep role playing because I couldn't imagine being that type of person. But let's say you have this situation. They're not really affecting you that much. They're just creating a bit of a negative environment around you.
Right.
You have this conversation. They're unresponsive to it. Do you go to a boss or does that create more tension? Because that's sometimes a problem. If you have a problem with a colleague, you want to handle it. You go to them directly. They don't respond to it. They continue to behave the way they're doing. Do you then go to a boss? And if you do, it might create even more tension.
Yes, and it sometimes does, or maybe going to HR. Again, the word that was coming to my mind is a phrase that I learned through Brené Brown's work. She's an amazing researcher talking about shame, vulnerability, and leading from the heart versus the armored leadership when you put the armor and, you know. So the phrase is clear is kind, unclear is unkind. Meaning, if I am clear and I set that boundary and I was assertive, that this is how I'm feeling disrespected, okay? And you keep on doing that, then I say, again, well, I tried my best, this is not working, I will go and talk to someone else who might help me.
Yeah, that's good. And I wanna move it, because that happens sometimes. You have a colleague, sometimes you can even ignore it. Maybe it's not the best thing to do.
Yeah.
But what do you do when that colleague is your boss, is your line manager, your direct manager? You can tell they're pointing you out in meetings. you're doing your work just as well as everyone else, but for some reason they pick on you, they give you the most trouble, they speak to you disrespectfully.
Right.
How do you then handle it? Do you have the same conversation with them, or do you risk losing your position, losing your job, maybe getting a demotion?
Okay. Maybe and maybe not. Meaning, maybe and maybe not I would lose my position or demotion. Because so many times, the behavior that we take in such situations when it's the boss, there's imbalance in power, is we stay quiet. Because we have a belief that he's our boss, he can do that. We need to pay the bills at the end of the year, the month, and we need that salary. And the thing is, people would say, okay, I cannot do that, so I'll go and change my environment and go somewhere else. The risk with that, changing the environment without changing my behaviors or beliefs, or maybe upskilling my skills in confronting or speaking up, would be risky, because who would guarantee that maybe I wouldn't face an even worse boss? So what I would do if I'm coaching these people, I would empower them to start speaking up. The behavior has to start somewhere by speaking up and changing that belief. Because if we both are employees at this organization, I'm not working for him, I'm working with him. And that change in belief would give the person the feeling that, yeah, I can start doing that. And the thing is, people started trying this and the things got resolved. And in some cases, it's not resolved, but at least they learned to change their behaviors, change their beliefs before going to another organization. Because unfortunately, the grass is not greener on the other side. You know, the grass is greener where we water it, where we do some changes before changing the environment.
But people are also a bit resistant to a change in behavior. So if you got into a job at 23 and you were, you know, nice and you would accept a lot, you'd take a lot of abuse. If you suddenly have boundaries and people see a change in behavior, then they're going to think something's wrong with you. Oh, suddenly you're being rude and you didn't used to be.
Yes.
Versus when you then go to the next workplace, if you start off having boundaries, being assertive to a degree, people already expect that from you.
Yeah.
Is it sometimes a good idea to change the environment?
That's when we learned how to change the behavior and beliefs. Yes. 100%. And that's a beautiful, scenario that you brought. But usually what happens is we quickly jump to change the environment before changing the behaviors and beliefs. And that's the risky part. But yes, 100%, if I'm really equipped to start, upping my skill in speaking up and saying no when it's due, then definitely changing the environment helps 100%.
I do want to remind you at this time that we are live. If you are watching live, you can leave a comment. If you have a specific scenario you'd like to ask Fertin about, or if you have a hypothetical you'd like to ask her about, you can do that at this time. Because I want to bring up a specific scenario.
Yeah,
you have a problem with the colleague, and it's not that the colleague is a bad person. The colleague is very nice, very sweet, needs the job. They've never offended you. They've never done anything wrong. But you work with them very closely, and they are not good at their job. Mm. And it's very hard to see from a managerial level that they're not good at their job. You find yourself carrying them, explaining things to them. Sometimes they make your job more difficult. What is the moral, ethical thing to do in that situation when you feel trapped because you're working very closely with someone, both of your work reflects on you, but you don't want to hurt them because they are a good person and you like them? Right. What do you do in this scenario?
Clear as kind.
What does that mean?
Clear is kind, unclear is unkind, meaning be clear. I can support you and I'm really willing to help you because I really admire your work ethics. You want to do a better job, but it's not working. Maybe you're better off somewhere else because you have this good relationship.
Would you say that to them directly?
Oh, yes. Because if I have this good rapport with them, this means they know that my intention is a positive intention and I'm not hitting around the bushes. That's why I said clear is kind. Clear is kind is just, I'm not hitting around the bushes. I am saying, I really see that you are struggling in this place. How about you try something else? And I would support you. I I have to share again. I feel I'm taking over the load over, and it's getting me tired. You know, there's a feedback model that Simon Sinek said, which is called an acronym is called the FBI, or sometimes they call it the SBI. F, feelings, behavior, and impact. So talk about your feelings, what the behavior was for that person, and the impact it had on you.
I love the advice, but a counter argument.
Please.
Correct me if I'm wrong. So you do this, you tell them this. Now, maybe they didn't realize that they weren't quite as good at their job as they are. There's a risk there of you going to them directly saying, I feel like I'm taking most of the work. I feel like maybe this isn't the best fit for you. Basically telling them you don't think they're good at their job. Maybe they agree with you, maybe they don't. But if you're working closely with this person and they don't take your advice on board, you now risk having a colleague who you find a little bit incompetent, a little bit difficult to work with, and now also dislikes you on a personal level. So I think that's a big risk. What would you say to that? It's a tough one, especially when they're a decent person.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And I still believe if we have good trust and rapport between each other, they know that my intention is a positive intention. You know that there's that saying that says, those who care do not mind, and those who mind do not care. Meaning, those who really care for you do not mind if you were tough and had that tough love, versus those who mind do not care for you in the first place.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, okay. So that's my thought. It's a tough one. It's not easy to share. But remember what I started saying, that everyone is a star. They just need to learn how to shine. Maybe that's not their place to shine, because he or she definitely got the potential, and they're struggling. Okay, now you made me think. Maybe they have another side of them that you don't know, which is maybe they're struggling in their personal life, and because you have again that good trust and rapport, maybe they can, if you get curious and like what's going on. They would open up and say, this is happening, and you could support them by directing them to the right person to help.
I mean, that does make sense. And I sort of want to expand it to the biggest it can be expanded now, right after we get a question from the audience. We've just received a question from you. Thank you. If you want to leave more comments for Fertin, you can do that. And our lovely assistants will hand me a card just like this. Got a question. How can I balance work and life better?
That's a good question, because we hear it a lot, right? I believe work is part of life, right? And when we're taking care of the basics, and when we are setting boundaries, things get balanced.
I mean, that is very good advice. And the thing is, it's not a problem to tell your friends sometimes, I'm tired.
Oh, yeah.
I can't come to such and such a thing. People do get offended, though.
Yeah. Those who care do not mind.
I love that. Know?
So if they really care for your well-being, they would love that you're sleeping in tonight rather than going out.
Yeah, and they probably wouldn't want to spend time with you if they knew that you weren't
exactly
at your
potential.
Best.
Yeah.
But I do want to go back to when you have a problem in the workplace. Sometimes a lot of people, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this, they're in a company, they're at a certain level where they're not in a managerial role, but they feel like they can see a lot of problems in the company, in the hierarchy. They see some big institutional issues when it comes to who their manager is, who their manager's manager is. They see things that could be done better. A lot of them are scared to mention it, because if you criticize an entire hierarchy of managers, there's a chance you'll make immediate enemies. Is it better to just stay in your lane and maybe find another piece of work? Or if you genuinely want to make the work environment better or your own personal job better, do you ever recommend voicing these concerns?
So when it's a hierarchy thing, I believe the whole organizational culture is kind of toxic, right? So the options You're asking me about what options do I have?
Do you ever think if somebody feels like every day they go to work and they feel like, I cannot be passionate about my work because I feel like fundamentally the company is flawed. So even if I do my job to the best of its ability, my company's flawed. Do you think in those situations, if they need the job, if they need the security, do you think it's a good idea to voice those concerns to the upper management?
It depends to who. Sometimes, like, I can't answer this question, to be honest.
Because it depends on the manager, it depends on individuals.
And yeah, because in any organization, not in in life, you know, there are two kinds of people, energizers and energy drainers. So if I'm talking to the whole hierarchy as energy drainers, then, and I'm an energizer, I'm better off maybe somewhere else. You know, the thing that, because I changed my career. I started as a pharmacist. And and I left pharmaceuticals because I felt, you know, there's something missing. And leaving that and going into another industry, first into higher education and now into the coaching and consulting business, that's what I told, again, I'm not preaching, that's what I said to myself. I'm not a tree. I can move. So if it's not supporting me anymore, then even if it's the prestigious, you know, pharmaceutical industry or, you know, I took the decision and I left.
If I ever change careers, I'm going to be a teacher. I would love to teach kids.
Yeah, amazing.
Taking that question and flipping it around to the top of the pyramid, we're talking to the big boss. Do you think it's important, or tell us how it's important, to not wait until morale problems arise? Do you think most people should wait until there's a morale problem to try and fix it? Or do you think there should be general checks to make sure your whole hierarchy is a non-toxic environment to make sure your employees are happy?
General checks every single day on how am I feeling going or driving to work. If I'm not, like, no one needs anyone to wake them up in the morning if they are inspired to do what they're asked to do. It's always that inspiration. And usually we are inspired, Faris, when it's in alignment with our values. So if what I'm doing is in alignment with what is important, my values are what's really important for me. If what I'm doing is in alignment, I know that I'm doing a good thing. And I don't need that motivation, you know. Sometimes motivation is a myth, to be honest, in my opinion. That carrot and stick thing, it's a motivation. Sometimes we don't need that carrot or stick. We need to be inspired. And you wake up every single morning at 5 or even before that, right? What drives you? Tell me, what drives you?
What drives me personally?
Yeah.
Passion, luckily. But I know for a lot of people it's a paycheck, which is unfortunate.
And that's what's causing the toxic workplaces.
Amazing.
Yeah.
We do have another question.
Yes, let's do that.
How can we show appreciation and recognition in our teams? This is from a manager.
Amazing.
How can you show your team? Not a pizza party.
No.
Okay, all right. That's always the go-to.
Yeah, or team building activities where you take people off-site one day and they think, you know, they spend lots of money and then they think things are getting gelled or cohesive teams. It doesn't work. There are 5 languages of appreciation in the workplace. And you know the 5 love languages?
I do know the 5 love languages.
Yes, so the same author did several sequels, and one of them was the 5 languages of appreciation in the workplace.
I think
he's a very smart man. He exhausted the material. So what he talked about are the same languages, which is words of appreciation. There are some people who are driven by words of appreciation. So say thank you, say amazing, well done, I'm proud of you.
I saw a study recently that shows that being praised at work is more important to employees than money.
Yes.
Than a pay raise.
Yes, yes.
Which is crazy to me.
And that's their language of appreciation, just like their love language, right? So it could be words of appreciation. It could be quality time. Some employees really would love to have one-on-ones with their managers often. And they would, once they have that, they would go home talking about the conversation that they had with their manager, like how much they felt important, heard and seen, and that's their language. Others could be gifts, you know, or
incentives.
Money. Yeah, incentives. Others could be acts of service for others. So meaning if I find Faris really like exhausted at work and so like packed with lots of to-do lists, and I know that that's your language, I'm free, I would jump in and say, how about helping? And that would make you the happiest if that's your language. And the fifth one, which is the physical touch or intimacy, that's in the love language.
That's not allowed. That's against HR.
They said, you know how they did that? They said, like, if you do like a high five or a pat on the back, in some situations you can do that, you know.
No back rubs.
No. You know, that could work for some people. So yeah, they transformed that into the workplace. So I hope that manager
is
happy.
So smart, yeah, because I know the love languages. I didn't think about it in terms of the workplace. And I would love to know, on that note, when it comes to fostering a better environment, do you think in the hiring process, people are always looking at the CV, what have you done, where did you study, what marks did you get, what have you implemented? Do you think people should look at character?
Oh, yeah.
And how do you find that stuff out? Because I feel like every workplace should have that person that's thoughtful, that brings the cake when it's somebody's birthday, somebody who wants to foster a community. How do you get that information out during the hiring process?
Asking behavioral questions. And yes, definitely, I fully believe that we shouldn't look at resumes or CVs only. We need to look at the person behind that, you know. And you could look into this by asking them questions on what drives them, what's really important for them, looking at their values. So yes, like lots of behavioral questions where that would go.
Do you think in your experience?
Can I just one point?
Oh, of course, sorry.
You said something and that scared me a bit because of that person who keeps on getting the cakes and being that nice person. That's something that scared me a bit because, again, that might be a sign of people pleasing. Mm. And that, again, is tough for those people because it's a lot. When you keep on giving, and these people don't know how to receive in return. So we're not advocating for these.
We're not advocating for that. Yeah, no, sometimes it can be people pleasing. Sometimes it can just be thoughtful. And I'd like to think that will spread in the workplace.
And it goes around. Yes, yes. No. If it's a fair distribution, yes. But if I'm the one who's getting the donuts or the cake or...
Yeah, it can be draining.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That's the only thing that I wanted to say.
Do you think it's effective or accurate while hiring to be able to get somebody's vibe while in the interview with them, to sort of get an idea of them, follow your gut on it? Or do you think people put on a certain front when they're being interviewed and maybe it's not the best metric or the best way to judge somebody? It can be.
Again, when you try to ask them a question which might put them off guard, they would forget the scenario that they wanted to play or the act that they wanted to play. And you could tell. I'm thinking because I just recruited someone to my team. And
did you have a feeling?
Yeah. And it doesn't take much, you know, the first 5 minutes. Yes, sharing the same culture, the same values as me or not, and the organization that I have, like the company, or not. So
we'll come back here in four months and see if it worked out.
Yes. She is starting third of June. So.
Yeah, Alf Mabrouk. Yeah, Alf Mabrouk.
Yeah.
Charles Bay the Wajahik.
Thank you.
We've got another question. Remember, if you want to leave questions, you can do that in the comments. How can I better address work expectations from older colleagues, especially difference in work ethics, such as hybrid/remote working? A lot of people are against the remote working. A lot of people think it's not conducive to a work environment. What would you say to the older, more old-fashioned people?
Be more tolerant because it is working, and people who are responsible and mature and have that, you know, they're taking this responsibility and they're doing the work, you know, why do I have to control them? especially, like, to me personally, one of my core values, Faris, is freedom. I had never before COVID was able to work a 9-to-5 job. In pharmaceuticals, I was doing sales. I wouldn't sit in the office if I don't have anything to do. I would rather be home or somewhere else. And since day one, I'm loyal to that value because I can't be restricted. You can't get good results from me when you do that. And there are so many people out there who realize this through COVID, thanks to COVID. So yeah, like, please don't restrict people. Give them the space, let them shine. They will, if you trust them.
Because even there are some managers, even with remote working, they've come up with softwares to see how often your mouse is moving.
They're
so many things to try and figure out if people are actually working at their computers.
I know, and that, you know, you reminded me once during COVID, I was coaching a gentleman and he was working from home. And every now and then he would move from his other computer. And I was like, what's that? He said, this is a system. And this blew my mind off. Like, what? But this shows that they are not trusting. And trust always, Faris, starts from within. I can never, ever say I trust myself, but I don't trust my people. It's impossible. This means I don't trust myself. Trust always starts from within. So this is a culture that, to me, I wouldn't want to stay at.
Word of advice. There is a mouse pad you can buy which will move the mouse for you. It is. You can get it online. I've seen it. It will move the mouse for you and you can go back to bed.
Interesting.
Remember,
I like that.
If you have any questions, you can throw them in. So I think we're getting towards the end of the discussion. I want to ask, I want to ask for managers, employers, job givers, anything we haven't mentioned yet. What are some things you need to move forward from this conversation doing in the workplace to foster more positive environment?
For managers.
For managers, for people in the position of power.
Yeah, positive communication, gratitude, like writing a gratitude letter to each and every employee when it's due, when it's deserved. Positive communication is a game changer. Forgiveness and empathy, because we really need more empathetic leaders. And empathetic leaders, by the way, are assertive. Sometimes people think that, oh, Faten lives on cloud number 9 and she's talking about empathetic leaders and these don't get the things done. No, they are assertive, but they're not aggressive. Assertive, they don't even have to raise their voice. They are kind, clear as kind. Aggressive people are the ones who are rude and raise their voices in the workplace. So empathy, forgiveness, putting ourselves in people's shoes make a big difference. You know, the thing with positive psychology, we say it's heliotropic. And what does that mean? It has a heliotropic effect. And what does that mean? It means that every living organism gravitates towards that light. But you see a tree just defying gravity and going horizontally until it follows the light and the light pulls it up. And that person, we always gravitate towards that person. Be it a manager, a friend, always that person who pulls us up, we grab. So be that person and everyone, you would be a real leader because everyone will follow you because you are pulling them up, you know?
I was getting close to ending, but I actually have a question. I have so many questions. When it comes to sympathy, because you mentioned it, and empathy.
Yeah.
I had a scenario the other day where my manager called me up and was giving me trouble about my vacation days. He wasn't being mean about it. There was a problem where I'd asked for annual leave, but it coincided with a different employee. Mm. He was like, any chance we could move them? I got a bit annoyed because I asked for them like a couple of months ago. Mm. But then I could tell in his voice that he was stressed.
Yeah.
And I remembered that he had a tough meeting with his manager that day. And now he has to deal with this annual leave thing. And I had a moment where I was like, he's my manager, so my reaction is to be annoyed. But he's also a person. Do you think it's important to have empathy and sympathy for our managers, even
Absolutely.
Though they're higher up than us?
Absolutely, because they're getting the knocks, right? They're getting the punches. And that's the good manager who doesn't make you feel that. You know, they don't, you know, panicky when the their managers.
And if they're feeling happier and more listened to, it's probably going to affect everybody more positively.
Absolutely.
And my final question, unless I come up with another one,
yes.
Is we ask the same question. We ask the question for the managerial level. What about the lower employee level? What are the most important things that maybe we didn't cover that you can do moving forward from this conversation to have a more positive work environment, whether it's at the company you're at or moving forward in the future?
My advice would be to surround themselves with those energizers, not the energy drainers, because it has been proven that even the productivity and profitability of the company was increased when you are surrounding yourself with those energizers in different departments. They don't have to be in your department. Just surrounding yourself with these people will, again, energize you and pull you up.
Can an energy drainer become an energizer?
I'm not sure, but if I go back to that cost and benefit, if they find value and it started costing them that they are draining themselves and others, maybe. We can never change any person until they feel the need to change. So maybe they feel the need. So let's again keep hope. I can't say no, impossible. Things change.
Fatla Ayash, thank you so much for being
thank
on World
you.
Talks Live.
Thank you. Thank you.
I definitely enjoyed that. Hope you enjoyed that as well. We are going to be doing a lot more of these, so make sure to follow us on our channels and make sure to watch this when it comes back on YouTube. Share it with your friends. This is part of VWell Community Connect. There's going to be a lot more of these. My name is Bin Faris. Fatin, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For being with us.
It was a pleasure being with you.
And we will see you next time. And hopefully you've learned a little something from this talk.